This message comes from NPR sponsor LiveRight, publishers of Left 4 Dead, Shipwreck, Treachery, and Survival at the Edge of the World by Eric J. Dolan. The true story of five castaways abandoned on the Falkland Islands during the War of 1812. Available wherever books are sold.
Today on State of the World, conditions in Gaza and tense Israel-U.S. relations. Thanks for listening to State of the World from NPR. We bring you the day's most vital international stories up close where they're happening. It's Tuesday, March 26th. I'm Greg Dixon. In a few minutes, an Israeli government minister who's involved in war decisions gives us Israel's view of the situation in Gaza and relations with the U.S. But first, a view on the ground in Gaza. James Elder recently visited hospitals in northern Gaza. He's a spokesperson for UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Agency, and he spoke to NPR's Leila Fadel.
I think I just want to start with where you went and what you saw.
Yeah, yesterday I was in the north of Gaza. It's like nothing I've seen in my two decades with the United Nations, both in terms of just the chaos and the destruction, the utter devastation of cities entirely reduced to rubble, and people standing on streets doing that universal symbol of putting their hand to their mouth, showing their hunger. We had a truck of medical supplies and so on, came through, and at a nutritional hospital, seeing mothers hunched over beds with severely malnourished, paper thin children. So there is a level of desperation, obviously among people. It's just despair pervading the population because of what they're deprived of, and because the bombardments. Living in that bombardment is hard to capture just what that's like for a family every night, to simply not know if you will wake up next morning.
You're describing horrors. I mean, what needs to happen to provide immediate relief so that some of this can stop?
Well, first and foremost, the ceasefire. The ceasefire is a very good start, but it must be substantive, not symbolic. The hostages must go home. The people of Gaza must be able to live. It's important to get a sense that Gaza has shattered humanity's records for its darkest chapters, if you will. Right now, to urgently write a different chapter from humanity, firstly, aid. We must have unrestricted, safe access to people in need. When I was in the north yesterday, seeing a child who asked me for a single tomato, seeing those people in need, remembering that there is an access point, a crossing there within 10, 15 minutes of where those people are. If we could use that, instead we're restricted to this one way down south. So that is one way to get aid very, very quickly. This is man-made. This is preventable. In the same way it's man-made, we can reverse it. You could reverse, this catastrophic decline into imminent famine if you suddenly made the decisions that would enable aid to reach those people. So those two things, a ceasefire has to be substantive. We need to be allowed to get much more aid to people safely. This is a very, very difficult place to work. And, of course, this discussion of a military offensive in Rafah is, well, I'm sorry, it's an offensive concept. Rafah is a city of children. I could describe what it looks like. A military offensive here would be catastrophe upon catastrophe.
Now, where you were yesterday in northern Gaza, that's where food security experts are warning that famine is imminent, and the rest of the enclave is facing that risk as well. Did you see evidence of that happening beyond northern Gaza?
In the south, it's different. In the south, it's more just despair and deprivation. You've got a city, Rafah now, which has got twice the population density of New York City, but no high rises. So and water systems have been destroyed. So imagine the sheer lack of access for people for the most basics. Now, there are, sorry for the numbers, but there are global humanitarian levels in a crisis that say there should be, one toilet for 20 people. In Rafah, it's about one toilet for 850 people. For showers, it's four times that number. So one shower for 3,500 people. Imagine an adolescent girl queuing for 6-7 hours to use a toilet or a shower. There's a hellish disregard for basic human needs and dignity. So with those things, we are seeing disease spread. If we keep seeing a lack of water and we keep seeing military bombardments, then yes, the population here will slide into those same kind of nutritional disastrous levels.
That's UNICEF spokesperson James Elder talking about what he saw in Gaza. Now, for Israel's perspective on the situation there, and to hear about Israel's relationship with the U.S., Leila Fadel spoke with Ron Dermer. He's Israel's Minister of Strategic Affairs, and he's involved in decisions Israel is making regarding Gaza. Dermer was supposed to be in Washington, D.C. this week, part of an Israeli delegation the White House requested. But Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu canceled that delegation after the U.S. abstained from a U.N. vote calling for a ceasefire in Gaza rather than vetoing the resolution. So Dermer spoke to Leila from Israel.
So I want to start with this meeting. You were supposed to be in Washington today at the request of the President of the United States, arguably your closest and most important ally. Israel rejected his request in the most public way possible. How is that helpful for Israel?
Well, it's not arguably the most important ally. It's definitely Israel's most important ally. We were very disappointed with the decision of the United States to abstain and to not veto that resolution, because what was new about that Security Council resolution is, for the first time, it separated the issue of a ceasefire from the demand to release the hostages. They were not connected, as they were just a few days earlier in a resolution that the United States put forward that the Chinese and the Russians vetoed. Now, that has been the importance of linking these two issues together, the ceasefire with the return of hostages. That has been a consistent United States position for the past almost 6 months. And unfortunately, they changed their policy there. Now, I was glad to hear that the White House and the State Department made clear that there's not a change in policy, but unfortunately, that's not what the text said. And because that's not what the text said, it's not surprising that Hamas and Iran blessed the UN Security Council decision that was made, the resolution that was passed and not vetoed by the United States. And I'll tell you, Leila, if Hamas and Iran are blessing a UN Security Council resolution, it's safe to say that it's not good for Israel, and I would argue it's not good for America.
Now, a lot of the international community also blessed it because they're very concerned about the catastrophic situation in Gaza, the mass hunger, and they do want a ceasefire in order to get badly needed humanitarian aid inside. And many of those people blame Israel for the trickle of aid that is getting in there and what seems starvation of children right now. What is being done to get aid in a way that will actually stave off imminent famine?
Well, there's no imminent famine. I think that's a complete lie.
That's what the UN says, and much of the international community.
I understand the UN is relying on reports. I heard what you said, and I heard your question, if you'd allow me to respond.
Sure.
That's a libel against Israel. You are taking, not just you, but the world is taking Hamas health ministry statistics at face value, propaganda from UN organizations that are there in Gaza. Understand, the most important UN organization operating in Gaza is the UNRWA organization. Now, 10% of UNRWA are Hamas operatives, and there were a dozen or more UNRWA officials who participated in the massacres on October 7th. The information that we have in Israel, and I think we have a pretty good idea of what's going on in Gaza, is that there is no starvation. We have ramped up humanitarian assistance. We continue to do so. We don't have any interest in harming the people of Gaza. We have an interest in getting after the Hamas terrorists. I think over the last week, about a couple hundred trucks have been entering every day. There's a real serious problem, Leila, with the distribution of the aid once it gets into Gaza. I mean, we can bring it to the border. We can inspect it and have it go on the other side. But distributing it becomes a huge problem because a lot of people are stealing it, gangs are taking it over, and Hamas is taking it over as well. And so we want to make sure that aid goes to the people of Gaza. That's why there's airdrops of aid, which of course also happened today. We're trying to get a maritime link to get more aid in there. We're opening up new passages so that more aid can go in. Israel will do its part to ensure that enough humanitarian assistance gets into Gaza. We have no problem with that. That's our policy. And those people who are suggesting that Israel has a policy of denying food or basic humanitarian assistance to the people in Gaza, it is simply not true. It is false, and it's a libel against Israel. And I think when the dust settles, people will see the truth about what's happening inside of Gaza.
Now, NPR has documented cases of extreme hunger. The world's leading experts on global hunger say famine is imminent. You're doubting the world's leading experts?
Absolutely. I'm doubting it because I know what's happening in Gaza, because I sit in the Israeli war cabinet, and day after day we get the reports. I sat in a cabinet meeting just on Thursday, and we saw exactly the pictures of food markets in Gaza, around 30 different places throughout Gaza. Those are not pictures that you would see that came that same day from a place suffering imminent famine. It is simply not the case. In fact, we did an analysis, our military did an analysis of all the food that is coming in. And understand, more food is entering Gaza today than entered Gaza before October 7th. What you don't have is the manufacturing of food within Gaza, but there's more food entering it today. More trucks of food, listen to what I'm saying, more trucks of food are entering Gaza today than entered before October 7th. And our military did an analysis of how much calories are entered to that food, and it's 3,000 calories per person in Gaza. So even if half of that is destroyed for some reason, you'd have 1,500 calories per day per person in Gaza. So this is simply not the case.
Okay, but we had the spokesperson for UNICEF on today who was in North Gaza describing extreme famine. You also mentioned UNRWA there. 12 out of 13,000 employees are accused. Does that disallow that entire organization that so many people depend on?
I think when 12 people were accused of perpetrating the massacres of October 7th, 10% of UNRWA are Hamas operatives. 50% are first-degree relatives of Hamas operatives. You have 400 to 500 who are part of the military machine of Hamas. What type of UN organization is hiring 500 people who are part of a terror organization? I think it actually stains the entire organization, and that's why Israel has said that we're going to stop all cooperation with UNRWA. Now, we'd love to have other UN organizations there. There's a World Food Program.
That's,
UNICEF,
of course, something
other groups
they,
that we can work
they
with.
Dispute, but I would like to talk about Rafah before we run out of time, because the point of this trip was alternative options. Is our alternative options for Rafah off the table?
Well, the United States, the president had asked the prime minister to send a delegation so that the United States could present its ideas for some alternative to a major military operation in Gaza. Now, this is not the first time we've had a disagreement with the United States over our military operations. Even at the beginning of the war, there was a disagreement of whether we should go in with a ground campaign. Now, that ground campaign proved very, very effective, and without it, there's simply no way to dismantle Hamas's military organization. And that's the key goal of the war that has to be accomplished to ensure that October 7th can never happen again, and we're well on our way to accomplish it.
Minister for Strategic Affairs in Israel, Ron Dermer, thank you for being on the program. I'm going to bring in our correspondent on the ground, Daniel Estrin. And I want to start with hunger. It's something you've been reporting on. We heard the minister say it's not true. What does our reporting show?
We've been working with a photojournalist in Gaza City, in North Gaza, Omar Al-Qata, who has been documenting cases of extreme hunger, cases of families who are unable to afford the exorbitant prices on the black market of food, people who have been feeding their children animal feed. I have spoken with a former senior Israeli official on military law who said Israel, quote, cannot dodge responsibility. Wherever the military has conquered Gaza, like in North Gaza, it has a responsibility in that area to ensure that civilians are fed. Secretary of State Antony Blinken himself has cited the extreme hunger in Gaza. And this is something that we're hearing the Israeli minister rejecting.
Help us understand how the minister's words there play into this growing rift between the U.S. and Israel.
You hear Israelis today alarmed by the growing public rift with the Biden administration and how the prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has been openly sparring with the U.S. administration by not sending his minister, Ron Dermer, to meet with officials in Washington. Netanyahu's Israel, in the eyes of many here in Israel, is becoming more and more isolated in the world, and now by its strongest ally. All of this, I think, Leila, is connected to Netanyahu's reliance on the far right in his government, relying on them for his political survival. Netanyahu cannot do basic things that the Biden administration is demanding, an improvement in the humanitarian situation in Gaza, but the far right in Israel's government is opposing aid getting into Gaza and is even allowing protesters to block border crossings where aid gets in. Netanyahu has not discussed a clear day after the war plan. He is not willing to entertain the Biden administration's hope that Hamas be replaced by the moderate Palestinian leadership based in the West Bank. The far right in Israel sees that as uniting the Palestinian territories and perhaps leading to a Palestinian state, which Netanyahu has rejected. And so you're seeing here the Biden administration losing patience with Israel over this war as it's dragging on. I think that is the context of what we saw in the UN Security Council. And a State Department memo that was leaked to NPR shows that the Biden administration believes that the Israelis are making a mistake, not understanding the reputational damage that this war is causing Israel around the world. Right now, Netanyahu needs a picture of victory against Hamas to convince Israelis that the war has indeed changed the status quo. The Rafah operation that Israel is vowing, which the Biden administration rejects, is the latest wedge in this relationship between the U.S. and Israel, a rift that is widening even further today, as we heard with the minister's words.
That was NPR's correspondent in Tel Aviv, Daniel Estrin, speaking to Leila Fadel. We also heard from Ron Dermer, Israel's Minister of Strategic Affairs. That's the State of the World from NPR. For more coverage of all sides of this conflict, go to npr.org/Mideast Updates. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again soon.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR. This message comes from NPR sponsor Vuori, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to Vuori.com/NPR.